Hey, so we're holding on Tzedek Chet on the base, about 10 lines from the bottom of the middle 5 lines. The line begins Bagby. Mishnah had said, Chometz v'over al v'Pesach, Omer la'arei shalach v'fanecha. If you stole Chometz from somebody, Pesach passed, that Chometz was also b'hanah, then the Gazlan is still able to return the actual Chometz and say, harei shalach v'fanecha. Here's yours in front of you, meaning this is the same Chometz that I stole. Not my problem that now it has, that now it doesn't have value. A little bit like, basically, similar to Nezik Shein Neker in that sense. We're not saying ethically he should, we're not saying ethically, Bidei Shemayim, there's no question, Kaya. The question is Bidei Adam.
He's Potter, why?
He's Potter because it's Nezik Shein Neker. Well, wait. The question is, Man Tana, Omen Bisurana, Shehare Shalach Panacha. Which Tana is it that says such a thing? That when it comes to something which is also Bahana, you're able to say Hare Shalach Panacha. Mela, okay, the Mishnah mentioned other cases, for example, where you have food that, all the cases we had over there were cases where the status of it has changed. For example, of a coin that was disqualified, or Turma that became Tame, etc. Where do we see that that's true, not only, for example, a coin that was disqualified, where the multibana, you just can't spend it, but even, for example, Chometz Shavar al HaPesach? Amar Rav Chista, Rav Yaakov. So Rav Chista says, that must be according to Rav Yaakov. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, we had this earlier in the Masechta, Shur Shehemis, a Shur that killed somebody, Ad Shalom Nigma Dinai, so if before the judgment on it was decided, before Beis Din convicted it and found the owner guilty, at that point, if you were to sell the animal, it's a valid sale. And actually, so Rashi says, not only it means it's a valid sale, as in the other person doesn't have the ability to say, well, hey, you sold me something which is also Bana, it actually is no longer also Bana. Once it's sold, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, then you don't have, you need Vahuad Vavalov, it has to be that it has the same owner from when it killed until after it's executed, as we learned before. So therefore, by selling it, Rashi says it would mean that actually it would be, in other words, so now it becomes potter from Misa. The Rashba disagrees with that, because the owner has changed. The Rashba disagrees with that. He says it wouldn't necessarily potter from Misa, but the point is, since you sold it before Gmar Din, at that point it's not Chayav Misa yet. So therefore, the other guy has no recourse. Later on, it's going to end up being, according to the Rashba, it's going to end up being judged and convicted and given skila, and therefore the buyer has lost his money. Not my problem. Anyway, Hekdishe Mukdash, if you made it Hekdish, then it would become Hekdish. Shachta the Sarim Mutter, if you were to shecht it during that period, before the Gemara, again, after the killing, before the Gemara Din, then the meat of it is Mutter. Hechzire Shomer Labailov, if a Shomer was taking care of the animal during that time, and now the Shomer returned the ox to its owner, so again, it became a Muad while it was by the Shomer, and now he returned it, it killed somebody, doesn't matter, time or Muad. That killed somebody while it was by the Shomer, now he returns it to the original owner. Mukhtar, it's considered a valid return. I return you your ox. Again, its status has changed, not my problem. Mishenigma Dinai, on the other hand, once the Gmar Din has already been done, once the animal has been convicted and based in, then Mokhre Eni Mokhre, if you sell it, it's not considered a valid sale because it's off the Bana. Hikdish, or not so much because also Bana, actually, Tosfos discussed earlier that as long as the animal is alive, maybe it's not also Bana, but the fact is it can't be considered a valid sale because the buyer is not going to be able to get any Hana out of it. Hikdish ain't Mukdash, if you declare it Hektish, it's not Hektish. Shach, to a certain extent, it's considered out of your resources. This is what we talked about the other day, the case, for example, where there were Adam Zemmin, et cetera. Once it was convicted, it's sort of out of the owner's resources.
The question is, why do we allow a sale to proceed once the Beit Din has...
That's what we're saying. Einei Mocher, that's what we're saying. It's not a valid sale. The seller will be able to get his money back and return the animal once it was convicted. Yeah, before it was convicted, you never know. It may not end. First of all, it may not end up being convicted. Remember, you need Adim, but you need Adim, right?
So we shouldn't allow the sale.
No, we should allow the sale. The sale can be allowed because the fact is the animal hasn't been convicted yet. Again, according to Rashi, it's not only that. Not only the sale is a valid sale, but it'll undo the fact. It'll make it as if the animal never killed anybody. It can't be convicted now.
Yeah.
once it's sold. It can't be exactly
so. So the fact that it's a suffix, whether or not the din is going to happen.
According to Rashi, it's not a suffix. According to Rashi, it's a bada. It won't happen at that point. Fine, he has the right to sell it. Again, according to the Rashba, not. According to the Rashba, that won't change its status as far as Misa, but the fact of the matter is he's selling it before Gemar Din, before it was convicted, and therefore it's a valid sale, because at that point it's still Mutzavanah. Just like we said that if you sheft it at that point, the buyer, why shouldn't it be? The buyer can just as well sheft it and then eat the meat. It is Mutzavanah, because it hasn't been convicted yet. Only once it's convicted does it become Mutzavanah. It may be, but that's not reason enough to ask this. No. We're not worried about what may happen. The fact is, it hasn't been yet. Okay. Anyway, so after the Gemara Din, Mocher in a Mocher, if Dishay in a Mokdash, if you declared it Hektish, it's not Hektish. Shachta, sorry, also, if you're shechted at that point and the meat is also, as we learned before from the whole Limwood from Stockholm, you Stockholm Asher. Hechdira Shomer Labailov, if the Shomer returns it at that point to the owner, ain't in Mokser, then it's not considered a valid return. In other words, the owner can say, I gave you an animal worth X amount to watch. You're returning me something which is also bana, which is worthless, therefore. You've got to return me the value of the actual animal. Rabbi Yaakov Oimer, Af Mishinigma Dina Hechzira Shem Lebaile of Mukhtar. On the other hand, Rabbi Yaakov says that no, even after Gemar Din, if he returns it to the owner, it's considered a valid return. So, my lav baha kamifagi. Isn't it, shouldn't we say that the underlying Machloikus is as follows. The Rabbi Yaakov Sava Omen Risurahana Reshalachanacha, but Rabbanon Savar Enemen Risurahana Reshalachanacha. It sounds like Rabbi Yaakov is the one who says, even though the shirt is Osabana, you can still say, fine, I borrowed a shirt from you, or you deposited it with me for safekeeping, whatever, I'm returning you the same shirt. Its status is different, not my problem. Hareshalachanacha. Where is it Rabbanon? And therefore it's Mukhtar. Where is it Rabbanon are saying that now? In that case, then, when our Mishnah mentions a similar case, Chometz v'Avra al HaPesach, on the face of it, it's the same thing. It should be only according to Rabbi Yaakov.
According to Rabbi Yaakov, it's actually weakened the Beis Din's decision tremendously.
I don't understand what you mean by weaken the Beis Din's decision. The Beis Din convicted the animal, it's going to be Chayiv Misa. At that point, the Shomer goes and returns it to the owner. Harish Alachof HaNacha, it's going to be taken and given Skila. That's not the Shomer's problem. I don't see how that weakens the Beis Din's authority. Amalei Rabba loy. So Rabba says to Rav Chista, not necessarily. Maybe everybody would agree, even the Rabbanan, that usually when it comes to Isura Hana, you would say Harei Shalach Lefanacha. Deem Ken, if the Gubba Chametz Pesach, because otherwise, if you're going to say not, why do the Chachamim and Rabbi Yaakov have to find this Farofen example of a shur that killed somebody? Why don't they say a more straightforward case? Somebody is masked chametz by somebody else. After Pesach, he returns it and says, Harei Shalach Lefanacha. Rabbi Yaakov would say that's considered a valid return, and the Chachamim would say not. It's a much more straightforward case. Ela Amar Rabba. So no, Rabba says that's not the underlying issue over here. It's rather something else that's specific to a shur.
Because it's not that straightforward.
It's not, you can't say that they're arguing on whether in general by Isura Hana you can say Harei Shalach Lefanacha. They both agree that in general you can. A shur, there's a specific reason why they argue. There's a specific detail, a specific particular in halacha that applies only to a shur hanisko, which is what they're arguing about. Namely, Ela Amar Rabba. Rather, the machloikus over here is it possible to convict the shur when it's not present? Now, we know with a person, you have to, if you're going to convict the person, and then a person definitely needs to be there. Does the same thing apply to a shur?
Then we should have said Adam B'Shur.
We should have said Adam B'Shur. The case that we're talking about over here about a shur.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, therefore, in other words, like this. Rabbanan Savri ain't gomer din for shur shalabachanav. The Rabbanan hold you cannot be gomer the din of the shur when it's not there. Because, basically, they say the Torah is making a hekesh between kemitzas bailam tach mitzvah shur, as we learned earlier in the Sefer. The same rules that apply to the owner, if he were to be convicted and based in, apply to the shur when it's being convicted. So just as a person needs to be there, everybody agrees to that, so also with a shur. Therefore, the owner has the ability to tell the shomer. Usually it's true. If it was just a matter of fine, you could say Harei Shalach Lefanacha, it's my problem. The issue is over here, though, rather, you caused me a loss. D'amalei, because the owner can tell him, Eisise Nihale, if you had brought the animal back to me before Gmar Din, Habamarikne Leila Agma, I could have allowed the animal to run off into the meadow. Not literally, ma'arikna literally means make it run away. Not necessarily make it run away. That might be, it might be also to do that. But at least I could have let it go. So I could have left the door open and it would have wandered off on its own. Where then it would be safe from Beis Din, because I can't convict it when it's not around. Hashta mesartia v'yadman b'lei matzina l'ishtuya dina b'hadei. As opposed to what happened now, you caused it to be given over to somebody, namely Beis Din, where I have no recourse to be able to get it away from them. Therefore, you caused me a hazard. So when we learned this earlier in the Masechta, we had a long discussion between Rashi and Tosfos about what exactly Rashi learned over there, that what happened is the Shomer actually gave it to Beis Din. The conviction took place. The Shomer actually brought the animal to Beis Din, and that made it possible for Beis Din to convict it. Tosfos discusses over there, not necessarily did the Shomer bring it there, but just the fact that it was in the Shomer's possession and Beis Din sent messengers to go and get it. The point is, in other words, the owner is still able to tell him, fine, but you kept it in your reshus, whereas you could have made sure that at the time when Beis Din is sending their shluchim, that it's out of the house. I don't know where it is. It's someplace out in the meadow. You want to go find it? Because it's a hit. Go find it. What? No, a hefker. You put it in the meadow. And so it goes out to the meadow regularly to graze anyway. Yeah, at some point it's going to come back home. At some point it's going to come back home. But right now, at this particular moment, I don't know where it is. Yeah.
It's hard to believe that you own a shirt and you don't know where it is.
Now, again, we're not... Look, you don't have a GPS tracker on it, right? I mean, as a general rule, it's going to, you know, you're sending it out to graze in the meadows and it's going to come home at the end of the day. Most of them do that. Right? If it gets lost, okay, then you'll go start looking for it, like Shoal did for his father's donkeys, you know. But I mean, ordinarily it'll come home.
Then
but right now,
knowing where it is, you don't.
So then bring it to best. You know? So
then,
the problem.
So then if they,
when it comes, home, bring
when
to
it
best,
comes,
right.
But the,
yeah.
Okay, but. Yeah. Right now, so meanwhile, I could have stalled for time. I would have had time, for example, while it's out there in the Agam. I do know where it is. Let's say, fine, I'll go out there and check it. And I would have at least had the meat. Now, like this, you kept it at home, and therefore Beis Din went and seized it right there, or even according to Rashi, you brought it to Beis Din, therefore you caused me a loss. So it's not a question of, can the Shomer say yes, but I'm returning you the actual ark. The Mazik is able to argue that you... Not the Mazik, the owner, sorry, is able to argue that you, the Shomer, actually caused me a hazard by not sending it off into the meadow and then informing me that I should come and check it or whatever.
But
like this, you gave it to Beis Din, or you allowed Beis Din to take it.
But that's the point of submitting yourself to Beis Din.
Submitting yourself to Beis Din, in other words, Beis Din wants this animal dead.
Yeah.
They want it convicted and they want it dead.
And you have to comply.
But if I want to go instead and shech the animal before my din, I'm perfectly entitled. Fine, Lagma, and then I'll shecht it over there, and then I'll bring the meat home, whatever. The point is, in other words, he could have stalled for time. Not necessarily when Beis Din came. If they had come to my house, not necessarily would they have found the animal there to take right away. As opposed to, you allowed it to stay there, therefore you allowed Beis Din to find it. So you caused me a hazard. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. Again, we're not saying... But it's not an issue
to stole Beis Din. It's not an issue.
Beis Din wants the animal in order to convict
him.
Instead of convicting it, I'm going to take the animal and shecht it. What does Beis Din care? As long as the animal's dead. Anyway, so according to the Rabbanan, they want it dead. They don't care if it's skillet, straight, a head, a chenek, shit, or whatever. As long as it's dead. As long as I'm not causing any hazard anymore. Okay, let's continue. So according to the Rabbanan, therefore, the owner has a valid claim against the Shomer. Rabbi Yaakov Sava, whereas Rabbi Yaakov holds, going to do initial Shor Shalei B'Fanav. You can anyway convict the Shor even if it's not present. So it doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter, in other words, what the Shomer did, whether he kept it at home, whether he sent it off to the meadow. Either way, there's no stalling based in it. If they don't find the animal, they'll go and then sit in judgment on it anyway. Therefore, D'omolei, so therefore, Rabbi Yaakov would say that the Shomer can answer, my Abdelei, well, what do you want from me? What did I do to it? Safe, have a Gamulei Dina Shalei B'Fanav. And if I hadn't had it at home, they still would have been going Medina if it wasn't present. So therefore, in other words, you can't say that I caused you any hezek because the animal would have been convicted regardless.
Sure.
Okay. So that's the issue between Rabbi Yaakov and the Chachamim, then, according to that way of looking at it. Not whether in general by Yisurah HaNoah you can say Arei Shalach HaFanacha. You definitely can, according to both of them. But this is a specific case that applies only to a Shur. So, further on this, further on the story, the Gemara says, Ashchet of Chista Rav Bashmul. Later on, Rav Chista met Rav Bashmul. Omalei Tonis Midi Bistura Hana. So tell me, as far as this whole machlokas that we have, as far as this whole discussion that we're having about whether you can say by Isura Hana, Reshalach Vanacha, have you learned any braisa about Isura Hana that would bear on this? Omalei Ein. Yes, Tanena, we learned in a braisa that goes as follows. The pasuk says, Veheshev Es Agzela, you should return the stolen object. Ma tamad loyma asher gozal. Now that would be enough. The Heshev Es Agzela would tell us, you have to return what you stole. What is the word ma tamad loyma asher gozal? What does the pasuk add by adding the words which he stole? It means, it means you have to return something which is similar in status to what you stole. Mikanom, based on this, the Chachamim said, gozal matev nifsal. If you stole a coin and then it was disqualified, withdrawn from circulation. Peres vehikivu, you stole fruit and it rotted. Yayin vehechmet, you stole wine and it went sour. Changes it to from behemoth to vehikri, started going sour, whatever, because the Gemara is going to make a distinction. The Gemara is going to make a distinction soon between whether it's completely rotted or only partly. So the same thing with wine, you can distinguish whether it's starting to turn or whether it's completely sour. Truma of a nitmes or truma which became tamei or chametz va'avar la'pesach, the hem of a nev debar veira or an animal where an avera where bestiality was done with it, and now it's possible as a carbon. Or a shur actually in Gadine, or a shur before it was convicted, in all those cases, you're able to say, I'm giving you back your original thing. I status has changed, not my problem. Now, man shamat le da'oma adshle nigma dina ein mish nigma dina loy. Who is it among the Tanoim we talked about before, between the Chachamim and Rav Yaakov, which one is it that says that there's a distinction between nigma dina and not? Rabbanim. That was the Rabbanon, we said, because according to Rav Yaakov, even after it's Nigma Dina, you can return it, a Shomer could return it, and the Pashtos, the same thing would apply to a Gazan. Man Shamathai, who have you heard? About whom have you heard? The Omer, that he says, Adshal Nigma Dina Ein, Mish Nigma Dina Loi, that if you return it before Nigma Dina, then it's a valid return on the part of a Shomer, but if you do it afterwards, then not. And we would assume that the same thing is true for a Shomer as for a Gazan. That was the Rabbanon. And yet we see that if you stole chametz and over all of our pesach, and then pesach passes, then the chachamim still say, so you see from that, in other words, that you don't have to say that in our Mishnah, when it mentioned chametz for all of our pesach, that it necessarily has to be according to Rav Yaakov. It could very well be it's according to the Rabbanan as well, the way that Rabba said.
Well, maybe it's the Rabbanan just on chametz.
And there's no reason to say that there'd be a difference between chametz and any other Mishnah. I know. So when Rav Chista started out by saying that all Mishnah must be like Rav Yaakov, and then we see from this Braisa, not so. We see from this Braisa that the Mishnah could very well be according to the Rabbanan as well. Like Rabba said, that the underlying machlokas is Rav Yaakov, and the Chachamim is something specific to Shor HaNisko and not something generic to Isur HaNa. Amalei, Sir Rav Chista tells him, Imashkachas Lahu, you know what? Now, if you find the other Bnei HaYeshiva, the other Chachamim, Lo Teima Lahu V'lo Midi, don't tell them anything. Meaning, Rashi says, what's going to happen? They're going to be happy that they found a way to slug me up. And now Rashi doesn't elaborate what the problem with that is, but the Poshita way of understanding would be like, you know, the famous tefillah that you say before coming into the Bes Medrash from that Nechunim and Akana used to say in the Sechta Brachos, that if my friends make a mistake in Torah, I shouldn't be happy at their expense, and if I make a mistake, they shouldn't be happy at my expense. So similar kind of thing. Rav Chista doesn't want them to be happy at his expense. Look, you know, we found a braisa that shlugged him up. With that said, though, there's a sefer called Chasti David from on the Tosefta from one of the Achronim who says, I mean, so what is he trying to hide? You know, what is he trying to hide? The fact is, he trying to play politics over here. The fact is, there's a price that contradicts him. He should say, okay, I changed my mind. And so he has a long explanation of how, given that machlokas earlier in the Masechta, Rashi and Tosfos, what the problem is with the Shomer failing to return the animal in time is, again, you know, where the Rabbanon argued the fact that you didn't return it to the owner in time caused it to be taken by Beis Din, versus Rabbi Yaakov says it wouldn't have made a difference anyway. And you have the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, is it that he gave it to Beis Din, or is it just that passively he allowed Beis Din to take it? So he has a long explanation that, based on those two different ways of understanding the Braisa, you could understand the Braisa, therefore, to say the way Rabbah is explaining it, that the machlokes between them is something specific to Shoran Miskol, or you could understand it still the way Rav Chista understood it originally, to say that to say that only Rav Yaakov holds this in the Rabbanan or not. So therefore he's telling Rabbah Bar Shmuel, according to this, he's telling Rabbah Bar Shmuel, fine, by all means, tell him the Braisa. Don't add your analysis that shows that therefore our Mishnah must be like the Rabbanan, because I have the right to understand the situation with the Shomer differently, the way Tosfos understands it, and therefore it wouldn't be a contradiction to my opinion. Mishnah says, since we're talking about so the previous Mishnayas, we've talked about. The conclusion is we have the Braisa that says differently than what Rav Chista says. So Rav Chista, according to this last explanation, according to the Chassid David, Rav Chista may have a way of explaining that Braisa according to his Shitta, but not necessarily though. We could equally say, like Rabbah, that the Machlokes is something specific to Shura Nitzel. The actual halacha is like our Mishnah, that yes, if it's only a change in status, Shrum of a Nitnus, Chometz, all of our Pesach, etc., you're able to say Harei Shalach Panecha. You are able to say Harei Shalach Panecha by Surah Hanah, in other words, the way Rabbah explains.
The other thing?
By all these Surah Hanah. Oh, okay. Sorry, before we get to the Mishnah, there's two more lines. The Mishnah had said, Peiris v'yukivu oimel Harei Shalach Panecha, that if he stole fruit and it's spoiled, then you can say Harei Shalach Panecha. Question is, that was in the Braisa, rather. Didn't our Mishnah say that if the fruit spoiled, you have to pay according to its full value when you stole it? There's a difference whether all the fruit spoiled or only some of it. If all of it spoiled, then there's nothing on which to say anymore. Therefore, you have to return him the full value of it. If only some of it's spoiled, then you can say Harei Shalach Panecha, like Rashi says. Don't say.
Less than the Rav.
I don't know if it's more than less than the Rav. I don't know.
I don't want to poison metal that's spoiled. I mean,
a certain amount. So yeah, I guess maybe. So since we've talked about in the last couple of Mishnayot about the shinuyim by which a gazlan acquires something, so now we're digressing a little bit to talk about a similar concept, which is when you have a craftsman making something for you or repairing something for you, under what circumstances is he kind of that? There's a relationship between it, because, for example, not this Mishnah, but the next one, because we're going to talk about dyeing wool, we quoted it a few days ago in connection with the case of a gazlan. It's a somewhat similar concept. So the Mishnah says, "Nosim la'umnin l'sakin." If you gave something to a craftsman to fix, now the word l'sakin, as we'll see in the Gemara, has two possible meanings. It can mean to fix. It can mean you have an existing keli, but something in it broke, and you need a craftsman to fix it. Or it could mean to make it, like you giving him wood to make something new. So the Gemara is going to discuss which one we're talking about. The kilkalu, and instead they messed it up. They built it or repaired it or whatever wrong. Chayavim l'shalom, and they're chayav to pay. Not to pay for the damage. If you gave a carpenter a closet or a box or a cabinet to fix, shida might actually mean like a wagon or something, whatever, all large wooden kalim. This is bekilkul, and he ruined it. Chayav l'shalom, and he's chayav to pay for it. Now what that's adding to the previous thing, that's another thing the Gemara is going to talk about.
What
is that adding to the first line? The first line had said if you give something to a craftsman to fix, and the second one is mentioning if you give him a cabinet to fix, it's the same thing. So we'll see in the Gemara. So what happens if a builder contracted to tear down a wall, the shibur ha'avonim, and in tearing down the wall he broke some of the stones, like this stone should have been kept whole in order to reuse them for another project. Or he damaged them. There's another girsa on the side of it here. Shehizik, that he caused damage with the stones. For example, while he was knocking down the wall, one of the stones fell down and hit somebody. Chayev l'shalom, then he's chayev to pay. But if he was tearing down one side of the wall and then a brick fell down from the other side, potter, then he's potter, because basically then it's grum. It's grum. It wasn't a direct thing. By the way, actually, to go back a minute, so when you said Shita Tevo Migo, and I said Shita is a wagon, actually, that's what Rashi says. It's the body of a wagon that's made for women to ride, and that's a shita. And teva and migdol are different kinds of wooden of wooden boxes or cabinets or whatever. Anyway, okay. So hoyas sois mitzad zavenach mitzad achapater the im machmas amaka chayev. But if the stone fell down the other side directly from the blow, so he banged on one side and a stone fell off the other side, then he's chayev because that's similar to Isha Nishum Chitza that we had earlier in the Sefer. It's not Grumma anymore, it's a direct result of him hitting on the one side. Yeah. Omer Abai. Loi shonu ela shenosam machodah shida tevo migdol v'nayitz v'hen masmer v'notz v'hen masmer v'shibra. This that we're talking about, that the uman is chayev to pay, is only if you gave him an existing keli, an existing shida tevo migdol, to, for example, put a nail in it, the nail had fallen out, and you need him to fix it with a nail, v'notz v'hen masmer, he's stuck in a nail, v'shibra, and in the course of doing that, in the case course of fixing the existing keli, he broke it, then he'd be chayev to pay. But if instead it was different, he gave a craftsman wood, raw wood, to make out of it a shita tevo migdol, but also he had shita tevo migdol, and he did make the actual object. He made the wagon or the cabinet or whatever, the shibron, and then he broke it, potter. Then he's potter from paying the full value. He just has to reimburse the guy for his wood. Okay, so what we're going to be dealing with for much of the Gemara over here is an issue called Uman Kone V'Shvach Keli. So it's like this. First of all, when you hire somebody to do a job for you, there's two different ways of doing it, right? You can hire him by the hour or by the day or whatever, by the period of time, or you can hire him by the job. That second kind, where you hire him by the job, and it doesn't matter how long he does it basically on his own time. You know, there's no specific amount of time that needs to be worked on. That kind of in English we call such a person a contractor. In Hebrew it's called a kavlon. The point that we're going to get at is when you're doing work, primarily when you're doing it with kavlonos, do we say that when you're taking the raw material, the wood, for example, and turning it into a cabinet, are you actually kona the keli by that shvach, by making that improvement to it? So afterwards, what happens is when you're getting paid for it and giving the guy his cabinet, what you're actually doing, it's more like a sale. It's more like he gave you the wood, you built the cabinet, and thereby you were kona it. Now you're selling him the cabinet back for, you know, he put the wood into it, so you're subtracting that. You're considering the value of your labor, the value of your craftsmanship or whatever, and that's what you're charging him for, and now the cabinet becomes his. So in other words, it would come out, up until this point, he owned the wood, you, the craftsman, owned the labor and workmanship and whatever that went into it. Now you're selling him that and he's paying you the amount.
He was kind of by
taking that wood and turning it into a cabinet. That's the point. In other words, if he were to break this cabinet, you can't make him chayev for the full value of a cabinet because the owner, the one who gave you the wood, the one who contracted with you, didn't own the full cabinet at that point. He hasn't paid you yet. He hasn't paid you yet. So therefore, you have to reimburse him for the parts, for the wood, which he provided. But you don't have to pay him for the labor. It's just you're not going to get paid. You're not going to get paid for your labor. But
can you say the labor is worth nothing because you messed up in any case?
Well, that's the point. In other words, so therefore he's potter from paying the owner. Practically speaking, he's not going to get his fee either.
He's kind of the keli, kind of the shvach.
He's kind of the shvach of the keli.
Of another keli.
Right. I think there's actually a discussion of Rishonim about that, whether he's kona the entire keli through the shvach or whether he's only kona the difference between the warm and whatever.
It can be either one.
Yeah. My time, uman kona b'shvach keli. The reason is because this craftsman acquires the keli, or the shvach of it at least, by adding that shvach. So therefore, the person who gave the wood, the one who contracted with him, doesn't own the full keli yet. So therefore, you can't make the craftsman pay for the full value of a keli.
Except when the work was messed.
Right. So if he gave him an ready-made keli and he just was supposed to repair it and broke it, then yeah, I mean he had to put any shvach in there. So then yeah. Okay. The Gemara says Tanan. All right, let's consider our Mishnah and see whether that can be made to work with this explanation. The Mishnah had said if you gave something to a craftsman and they messed up, chayavim l'shalom, they have to pay. My lab, the yard l'oreitzim. L'chura, that would be a case. It's talking about you gave them wood and they made a cabinet out of it and broke it, and we said chayavim l'shalom, that you have to pay the full value. The answer is no. Should it take omigdol? No, it means that, for example, you gave them an already made cabinet and they broke it in the course of trying to fix it.
Okay.
And in that case, for sure, then he had to pay the full value because there was no shvach keli for him to be kind of. Okay, how many katani say for shidu tevo omegdom a kabel reisha etim? Fine, but the second line of the Mishnah mentions specifically the case of a cabinet or whatever, or of a wagon or cabinet or whatever, implying the first case must be talking about where you gave him wood. Two different cases. Amri, they answered no. Poter should come a farishla. No, because you could say the second line of the Mishnah is explaining. It's giving an example for the first line. Okay, Tosfos points out if that's the case, it really shouldn't have said chayovin at the end of the chayovin l'shalom at the end of the first line. But okay, sometimes we find such things.
Why should have said
chayovin? In other words, because if it's just giving an example, it should have said nothing l'umnim v'kilkalu ketsad nothing l'chora shidatevo mezo. Yes, nothing. So ketsad, in other words, the Mishnah means to imply what's an example of what I mentioned in the first line about nothing l'umnim. Nothing l'umnim v'sakim v'kilkalu chayovin l'shalom. If you gave something to a craftsman to fix and they messed it up, then you chayav to pay. Kigoyin shenasim l'chora shidatevo mezo. For example, you gave him a wagon or a cabinet. This actually seems to be logical to Kate and Katani, that the second line of the Mishnah is just explaining the first one. It's not talking about a case where you gave him raw materials and he made a case. The Isak that Horesha ate him, because if you were to say that the first line of the Mishnah is talking about where you gave him raw materials, Hashta, then you'd have to consider like this. Ashma Inan ate him Chayavim L'Shalim. You're telling us that if he gave him only wood, he's still chayav to pay the full value of the keli, v'loyam rinan umen koin v'shvach kelim, that we don't say that the craftsman has acquired this keli by adding a shvach to it, by adding his craftsmanship. Shid a tevo migdum aboya. Would it need to tell us the case where you gave him an already made keli? No. So it's more like
saying that
if you said that if you gave him raw material and he messed it up then we're saying he hasn't acquired it, therefore he's tied to pay the full value of a keli.
Right.
How much more so if you gave him an already finished keli? The second line of the Mishnah wouldn't even be necessary. Yeah. Gemara says, okay, that's not much of a proof. Imishum halayiria. No, because that's not really much of a proof. Because you could very simply, the Tana is Faket. You could say the Tana gives us the second line about the cabinet Faket to tell us to explain the Resha, not to explain it as an example, but Faket, to explain that we shouldn't misunderstand the first part. You might have thought to say that the first line is talking about you gave him a cabinet, like Rav Asi is saying. But you would think maybe if you gave him wood, that rule would not apply. Instead, Tana Seva, Shidatevo Migdom, the Resha Eitzim. No, therefore, the Tana specifically mentions that the second case is a Shidatevo Migdom, an already made cabinet, Miklal the Resha Eitzim, implying there, which could be understood to imply that the first line is talking about raw material, about raw wood. And nevertheless, we're saying he's Chayav to pay. In other words, okay, you could say the fact the Mishnah has to tell us the second case to clarify that in the first case, when it's raw wood, we don't say Umen Koin of a Shvach Keli. So not the way Rav Asi is understanding it.
If we didn't have the second line talking about full Keli,
we would think that the first line is talking about a full Keli. And then we would say you would think means to fix it. So you could argue, therefore, that nothing l'um l'sakin means to say where you gave him raw material to make a keli, and therefore he's chayav in the whole thing. And the second case is talking about a shita tevo omigdol, also he's chayav for a full keli, because we would say the umen is not koin of a shvach keli. So not necessarily can you say that the Mishnah is a proof to Rav Asi, because you could understand it differently. Lema Messiah, however, can we then say that we have another Mishnah that proves Rav Asi's point? Which, in a way, actually, it's interesting. The Marsha says, in Madura Basra says the Gemara is going to bring this next thing as a proof to Rav Asi. But on the other hand, it's sort of a kasha on him as well, because if we have the next Mishnah clearly points out his point of Umen Koin B'Shvach Keli, then we didn't need our Mishnah as well. So on the one hand,
the
the next Mishnah, which we're going to talk about, which was going to be on the next Mishnah on Kuf Amud Beis.
Could be from somebody else.
No, usually we assume that all Mishnayos that come one after the other all come from the same Tana. Rav Asi is an Amora anyway, but if we have the next, the point is, by implication, if the next, on the one hand, fine, the next Mishnah seems to very clearly say Umen Kohen B'Shvach Keli, as we will see, as the Gemara will explain. On the other hand, though, that becomes, in a way, a kasha and Rav Asi. So on the one hand, it proves his point that, yes, it is valid to say Umen Kohen B'Shvach Keli. On the other hand, then you have to ask, why do you have two Mishnayos telling us the same thing? Okay. So the Mishnah says, the next Mishnah says, Hanosim Tsemel Tzava, if you give wool to a dyer, the Hikdicha Yoda, and the vat burnt it, you know, you left the wool in there too. Well, we're going to see, actually, there's a few possible ways that could be. It could be that you left the wool in there too long, and or on too high a flame or whatever, and therefore after a while it got burned. Or you could have to begin with, the flame was too high, and therefore the dye was ruined, and so was the wool. That's what we're going to discuss in the next couple of lines. So, noisim ledmeit samrei. So the Mishnah says that the craftsman just has to give the owner the value of his wool, implying dmeit samrei ein, dmeit samrei v'shiv chaylod. All you have to pay him is the value of his wool. You don't have to pay him the value of the wool plus the shvach. Plus, I mean, after all, dyed wool is worth more than undyed wool.
If you just give him the wool?
If you just, the wool itself is worth $5. Dyed wool would have been worth $8. Eight, let's say. So you're saying you have to only give him $5. Now why?
For what?
For the fact that the wool was ruined. So the point is, we see that you don't have to pay him for the shvach.
Right.
So why is that? Lav sheik dicha la'achan fila de'ikha shvacha. L'chora, shouldn't we assume the Mishnah is talking about where he put in the wool, and if he had taken care of it, it would have come out nice, and there would have been a shvach. Only afterwards was it damaged because he left it in there too long. Therefore, you see from that, the ikha shvacha, where then at least there was a shvach at the beginning. There you go then. There's an example where the Uman acquired that wool because of the shvach that he put into it. Therefore, he lost it because he left it in there too long. Fine, but that's the equivalent of giving the craftsman wood to make a cabinet, and then he makes the cabinet, and then afterwards he breaks it.
So initially,
that's the point. Uman Kohen B'Shvach Keli, and therefore he only owes the value of the wool. Because again, at the moment over there when the wool was properly dyed, now at that point they're partners in it. The Balabas owns $5 of it for the value of the wool. The Uman owns $3 or whatever, which is a better, yeah.
And they lost it by the...
And they lost it, fine. But that's the equivalent, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't own it in the first place.
Right. Amar Shmuel, no, because Hochab Mayaskin, no, because you could just as well say the Mishnah is talking about B'Shach Nefila, because you could be saying that it's a case where it was ruined as soon as it was put in. Right away, when he put it in, the flame was too high, and no, that the point is, the Lekha Shvacha, therefore there is no Shvach. There's no Shvach to say.
If it wasn't immediately after it was given to him, then he would have earned it.
That's the question. So what are you telling me then, that if it got ruined only later, then he would actually have to pay him the full value of the wool plus the shvach? Lema Shmuel Lesley de Rav Asi. In that case, are you telling me that Shmuel does not agree with Rav Asi's concept of Shmuel Umen Kohen B'Shvach Keli? So on the one hand, again, I mean, it helps Rav Asi in that you don't have two Mishnayos saying the same thing. On the other hand, it creates a problem for him, because since we know the usual rule of Halacha is like Shmuel and Dinei Momonos, if we say that Shmuel does not hold like Rav Asi, that's as much as to say that Halacha is not like Rav Asi.
Well,
Rav Asi is saying Umen Kohen B'Shvach Keli, and Shmuel implicitly, as long as there was a shvach, and Shmuel implicitly would be saying that not. Even though there was a shvach, the wool was dyed properly initially, but then it got burnt, then it got ruined. At that point, you owe him the full value. Not, you don't say you only owe him $5 for the wool. You owe him $8 for the wool plus the dye plus the whatever.
And Rav Asi
would disagree with that. The answer is Amalach Shmuel, Chachav Mayaskin, is going to some of someone in the Balabayas. No, because the case can be talking about over here. The wool and the dye belong to the Balabas. The Tzaba Ago Yodehu Deshakil. Here we're only talking about the dyer is only getting paid for the labor that he put into it. In other words, The difference is a couple of Meforshim, I think the Ravid and some others talk about a bit of a distinction, as a Tosfos, I mean, a Peretz, I think, actually talks about it, that there can be a bit of a distinction between, for example, a cabinet where you supply the wood and the only other thing that goes into it is the craftsman's labor. As opposed to with wool, there's really three different things. There's the wool, there's the dye, and there's the craftsman's labor.
And why are we saying it's different if you provide the wool and the dye?
Because so if you provide
more than just the wool.
Because if you provide the wool, because that's
still smart.
Because the thing is that then you have one second, listen. Yes, but basically Rashi says the dye essentially accomplishes the job of the shvach on the wool on its own, kind of. The dyer is a socher. The dyer was hired to do the job, but the actual shvach is being accomplished not so much by the dyer's skill, but rather by the dye which was provided by the boss himself. In other words, let's put it this way, for example. You give wood to somebody to make a cabinet for you. That wood is never going to become a cabinet without the carpenter doing his job.
It's never going to become
if you have dyes ready made and you have wool, all the wool has to do is fall into the dye and it'll get done. So yeah, you hire a craftsman, you hire a dyer to do it for you to make sure it gets done properly, because you don't just want to rely on what the wool made. He's accomplishing less of the shvach than a carpenter making a cabinet.
That I agree,
okay.
You cannot say there's no shvach.
Not saying there's no shvach, but in a way it's kind of a difference of zev zeh goyim. You could say that when it comes to a dyer, there's two if the Baal Bos himself supplies the dye, there's two things that are needed in order for the shvach, and only one of them is the dyer, as opposed to with a cabinet where the whole shvach is accomplished by the carpenter.
Yeah, it's a different process.
So it's a different, but therefore, that's the difference, in other words. So therefore, when it comes to a cabinet, you can say, when it comes to you give him wood to make a cabinet, you could say, umen koinim shvach keli. When it comes to wool being dyed, there's less shvach that the dyer is putting into it. Basically, the shvach is being accomplished using the materials that the Baal Bos provided, not just the wool, but also the dye.
So we're not saying that it's important that there's more shvach than less shvach, and if there's less shvach, there's no shvach. What we're saying is there is shvach or there isn't shvach.
Right, but the dyer, the type of shvach that he puts into it is of a different kind. So that's the point. In other words, therefore Shmuel can say that. The difference is. If the Baal Bos provided the wool and if the Baal Bos provided the wool and the dye,
right.
What do we have? The Mishnah doesn't specify when it got damaged, right? It could even be that for a while there was a shvach and then afterwards it got damaged, but because you can't really say umen koinim shvach keli, because the shvach primarily was done by the dye and not by the dyer, therefore. Therefore, there was nothing for him to be kind of. He would have to pay the value of dyed wool. Yeah, the value of dyed wool, which is more than the value of raw wool.
The value of dyed wool?
Yeah. You want, let's look in Rashi, Amalach, the last line of the wide lines on Rashi. Amalach, Shmuel can tell you, Homas Nithin, the Mashma, the Ikdiach Achad La'achad Afila Yoiva Namid Dmei Shvachay, that the Mishnah seems to be implying that if it was ruined after it fell into the, later on, after it was put into the vat, it was ruined. La'achan nefila, after it fell in, yorvled nami dmei shvachay, that you give him also the value of the shvach, that would be, that would be talking about a case where the wool and the dye both belong to the balabas. D'hol lekalameimu umen koinu b'shvach keli, in that case, you cannot say that the craftsman has been koinu the keli through its shvach, d'samonenhu d'mashav chile, because it's basically the dye that causes the shvach, d'tzaba sochir ba'almahu, The dyer is just a hired worker. He's not really in that sense a kablon, a contractor. He's more of a hired laborer. However, it is perfectly true that if the dye belonged to him, then he would be kind of a shvach keli. Then mashalam elad made samurai, and he would only pay the value of the wool. Again, that's the difference is If the again, there's a difference. The difference with the wood. In one case, he owns the dye, and therefore, so therefore, you have to consider what is going in, what is creating the shvach, the dye, or the tzava.
The work is
coming. No, but not really. That's what Rashi says. It's basically the dye.
In the pudding, the fact that he delayed the dye and he destroyed the wool shows that the real shvach was by the skill of the person who dyed the wool.
If the wool had fallen in there and then if somebody takes it out from there, it'll also be dyed. No, it won't. Not if he takes it out fast enough. Okay. But there's a skill in taking it out, fine, but that's a skill to prevent it from getting destroyed, not to create the shvach in the first place. There's a difference in creating the shvach and destroying it.
Isn't that the shvach?
No. The shvach is the fact that the wool has dyed at some point. Okay, then the question is, fine, but if you're going to explain the Mishnah that way, the way Shmuel is trying to explain it, the Mishnah should say that you have to reimburse the owner for the value of the wool and the dye, because he provided both of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to answer, Shmuel is not saying this as an actual explanation of the Mishnah. Not necessarily does he disagree with Ravasi. He's just saying the Mishnah itself is not necessarily stating what Ravasi wants it to state. The halacha may well be a halacha. So that Mishnah is not necessarily stating this point of Oman Kohen B'Shvach Keli, and therefore you're back to that you don't have a problem, so therefore you've solved both problems with Ravasi. On the one hand, you don't have Shmuel disagreeing with him, so that Halacha can well be like him. On the other hand, you don't have two Mishnayos that are effectively saying the same thing.
Sure.
Tashma, come, let's try to prove.
So,
fine. Okay, so we don't have any proof one way or the other from these two Mishnayos yet. We still have to figure out this business of Oman Kohen B'Shvach Keli, so to continue. Tashma. If somebody gives his talus to a craftsman to fix or whatever, if he finished the work on it and informed him that it's ready to pick up, then even if he waits 10 days before picking it up and paying the person, he's not yet over on the mitzvah that you have to pay a worker on time, that you're not allowed to delay the payment overnight. On the other hand, not because he didn't pick it up yet, because he didn't pick it up yet. Once he picks it up, he's obligated to pay, but he hasn't picked it up yet. But if the craftsman gives it to him in the middle of the day, and then as soon as the sun sets, this person is over on delaying payment to a hired worker. He has one owner. He has one 12-hour period. Yeah, okay.
If he gets in the morning, he doesn't.
There's two places, one in Mishpatim and one in Kisei, that talks about this din. One talks about where the guy did the work by day, where you're supposed to pay him by before the end of that night, and the other one is where you did the work by night, you're supposed to pay him by the end of the next day. Anyway. The Isak that a woman kind of a shvach keli. Now, if you're going to tell me that this craftsman, by doing this work, we're assuming, when we say over here, I know it's in Talis of the woman, we're assuming that you gave it to this woman to do some work that will create a shvach in it, to fix it or whatever it is. So, if you're going to tell me that he was kind of with that shvach, am I over Mishum Batali? The woman. The craftsman, whatever, the dry cleaner, whatever it is, yeah. Why are you over on Valtolin? He was coined at that point. Fine, all it is he's supposed to be selling it back to you for his fee.
Fine, but you
haven't gotten around to coming and buying it off him. But why are you over on Valtolin, which applies only when you hire somebody to do a job for you, and you only
pick up the thing.
No, but that's the question. Even if you picked it up. No. Right, that's the question. In other words, even if he picked it up, that's the point. The Uman was coin it. You, by picking it up and not yet paying, fine, you can be considered a gazlan, maybe. You can't be considered that you hired him to do a job and haven't yet paid him for it. He still owns the actual palace. If you don't end up paying him, he'll just take the palace right back, yeah.
So if that applies to the dry cleaner, I mean, that means...
No, dry cleaner is a bad example. Well, we're going to see, actually, and we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to see what kind of work is being done on the palace, right? You're not talking about, for example, that you were giving it to somebody to actually improve it. Let's say, for example, when we said, We could have thought it meant, for example, that he's going to add that you know that he's going to add or that he's going to add a new design to it, that he's going to that he's going to dye it a different color, that he's going to whatever improve it somehow.
Right.
We could be talking about rather that you gave it basically like a dry cleaner kind of. You gave it to him in order to gave it to him in order to fluff it up. You gave it to him in order to fluff it up. Deleka shvacha, which in that case there's no real shvacha in it. It's worth the same amount as it was before.
And
it, well, but actually, though, the thing is, fluffing it up, Rashi explains above Matthias, the point is, fluffing it up, on the one hand, it makes it look nicer, it's more comfortable and all. On the other hand, it weakens it. So you can't call it, you can't say it's a shvach kale. Right, but the point is that it does weaken. You know, dry cleaning is a good example of that. Then, you know, the more, eventually, you know, the more you clean clothes, the more the fibers weaken, right? But on the other hand, it's true. You can't go around with dirty clothes, but you also can't say that's woman kind of a shvach kaili. It's not really a shvach. That's not improving the value of the garment.
And we bring it back to the original faith.
Well, that's what there's with the Gemara. Well, after all, lamai yava nile. Well, after all, why'd you give it to this guy then? L'rakuchi, because you wanted to soften it. Well, kivin derakche haina shvacha. Fine, if he softened it, isn't that considered the shvach? The answer is lo tzricha da'agri l'bitchi. Yes, but you can be talking about a case where you hired him to step on it. The way it used to work, Rashi explains in again in Bava Metzia, that part of the process of cleaning clothes in those days, sort of similar to, you know, you hear people beating clothes against rocks in the old days. Nowadays, that's why you have a washer who spins them around. It's the idea to beat the clothes against something to loosen the dirt that's in them. In those days, sometimes the way to do that would be you'd have somebody whose job it is to step on the clothes. To step on them and look at
the
well, the point the, no, forget. Then there's no shvach in it. Wait. Then he just exactly. Well, that's what the Gemara is going to ask. One second. The agri labichi, you hired him to trample on the clothes. Bitcha b'masa. You hired him, for example, each trample, each time he steps on it, is going to be worth a ma. It's going to be worth a certain amount of coins. The Hainus Schirus, which therefore then that's not a kablon. A kablon again is you want the clothes, I want the clothes back clean. The exact amount of time you take on it doesn't matter to me as long as, you know, I mean, I want it by a certain time, but whether during that time it takes you an hour or it takes you 5 hours is no concern of mine. That's a kablon. A socher is you're hiring him by the hour or by the specific number of hammer or of foot blows or whatever it is that he's doing. Therefore, that's a socher. That's not a kablon. You can't say Oman Koine B'Shvach Keli in that case. Oman Koine B'Shvach Keli only applies to a kablon. Doesn't apply to a socher where you're telling him, if you work on this for an hour, I'll pay you X amount, and if you work on it for 2 hours, I'll pay you X times two, etc. That would be what we're talking about over here. Therefore, that's why you're over on Baal Tolem if you don't pay him in time. The Gemara says, "Olmai de solik adaitin mi kodah de le'agru lebitchi." Now, when we started with the assumption that you didn't hire the person based on the number of blows that he does, but rather that you did it on a kablonus, as a kablonus, that you want the clothes clean and you don't care exactly how many times he steps on it or tramples it or whatever. Then, if we're going to say that, Messiah le'le Rav Sheshes, then we could use that to support what Rav Sheshes says. The Bowman name Rav Sheshes, because in fact they asked Rav Sheshes this question. Kablonus overall mishum bal tolana ain't over. If you hire somebody with kablonus to do a job, you hire him by the job, not by the hour or whatever, overall mishum bal tolana ain't over. Or if you don't pay him in time, is that a violation of bal tolan? The Amal Rav Sheshes over. And Rav Sheshes tells him you would in fact be over.
If you say that
the case where you gave it to the woman is talking about that you gave it to him, for example, for dry cleaning, where, again, you don't care how the exact amount of time he works on it, you just care that the job gets done, and the b'risa was saying that you're over on Baal Tolem, if you don't pay him in time, that's what Rav Sheshes is saying. Right. However, since then we ended up explaining the b'risa differently, then no, that doesn't necessarily prove what Rav Sheshes is saying. Okay, Gemara says in that case, Leimud Rav Sheshes pligadir ad Rav Ashi. Fine, then does that mean necessarily that Rav Sheshes disagrees with Rav Ashi? If Rav Ashi had said, Uman Koine B'Shvach Keli, that, for example, you give the thing to a craftsman to cause a shvach and he's Koine, Koneh implies there's no Bartolin, because again, you right now have in your possession something that belongs to him, as opposed to that he did work for you, which you haven't paid. Yeah, as opposed to Rav Sheshes doesn't make that distinction. Does that mean Rav Sheshes disagrees with Rav Asi? No, because you could say that Rav Sheshes' case is talking about where there's no shvach at all. Namely, for example, you hired somebody to deliver a letter. So it's a kablonus in the sense that, again, you don't care the exact amount of time he travels every day, as long as the letter gets there in time, as long as the job is done. On the other hand, there's no shvach to talk about, unlike, for example, with the cleaners. That might be where Rav Sheshes says, because there's no shvach to talk about, therefore, fine, he may be a kablon, but you're still over on Baltolin. But if there was shvach, he might agree with Rav Asi that you can't be over on Baltolin because there's no schirus, there's no hired work to talk about that you failed to pay for. It's rather there's a garment or whatever it is so, that you have in your possession, which until you pay for it belongs to him.
So in other words, they would both agree if there is no shvach, but when there is shvach,
right,
then they might disagree.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, Rav Asi is not talking about it. Rav Asi is telling us Umen Koneh Shvach Kehil. So if there's no Shvach, then there's nothing for him to be Koneh.
Right.
So he might agree with Rav Sheshes on both points, that if there's Shvach, then there's no Baltolin, and if there's no Shvach, then there is, but then the fact that he's a Kablon doesn't prevent it from being Baltolin. Yeah.
So what are they arguing about?
So then they may not be arguing. Rav Asi is saying his thing, Umen Koneh Shvach Kehil. Rav Sheshes is saying his thing, but Kablon, you can be over on Baltolin. They're not disagreeing with each other. They're each stating a different detail.
If there is shvach, there is no baltolin, isn't that?
That's the point. Okay, but you can deduce one from the other, but each one said a particular detail of it.
Yeah, but they're not saying the same thing.
They're each saying one detail of it. One is talking from the point of view of Umen Koneh B'Shvach Kehil, that you should know, therefore, as far as, for example, the case of our Mishnah, that therefore the Umen is not going to be higher for the full value of the Kehil, just for the raw material. And the other one is telling you that, by the way, if you hire a kablon and pick up the thing from him and don't pay in time, you're over on Baltolin.